Good afternoon. This is the professor, Dr. Ron Daniels, president of the Institute of the Black World 21st Century, and distinguished lecturer from York College, City University of New York, welcoming you to this June 14th edition of Vantage Point here on 99.5 FM. That is the Pacifica Dial. That's the Pacifica station in collaboration with YCRadio.org. That's right. The York College community is connected by way of the internet. Have a very special show today. If we can pull it off, we hope. We have a very special guest, Julia Wright, the daughter of the iconic author of Black Boy, Richard Wright, will be joining us from Paris, France, and we'll be talking about remembering Black Boy and the legacy of Richard Wright and much more as we talk about a number of issues that she is now working on, also connected to Elaine, Arkansas, where there was an incredible massacre, a horrific massacre in 1917. Before we move to the interview, however, just want to continue to urge people to be safe and disciplined. There's now this Delta variant that looks like it's going to take over. All the more reason why, if you are inclined to get the vaccination, talk to your doctor, talk to people that you trust, if you will, to get information in relationship to the whole issue of getting vaccinated. There's a danger in the wintertime that we could, you know, we could be having difficulties again. The Prime Minister of Great Britain, Boris Johnson, has postponed relaxing the COVID restrictions for another 4 weeks because this Delta variant is, in fact, very, very transmissible, and it is more hospitalizations. If you're vaccinated, however, you do have protection, not as much as some of the other variants, but still preventing a death and severe illness, which is incredibly important. Once again, we know that a lot of people are experiencing anxiety. I happen to think that a lot of these mass murders that are taking place and killings is people, this stuff is just driving people crazy. It's just been tough, and we have to get a handle on it. We really have to get sensible gun laws. We have too many guns in this country. It's ridiculous. I mean, it's just absolutely ridiculous. We have the governor of Texas now with a new open carry without permit law. You're just walking up and down the street like the Wild Wild West with your weapons. And assault weapons. Why do we need assault weapons? These are weapons of war. But they're out there, and people are just, you know, it's just very, very painful, these mass murders. So, but anyway, there's a lot of tension, a lot of anxiety. That's why the Institute of the Black World 21st Century has established the Community Cares Listening Line. It is, we have enjoyed the partnership of WBAI on this, and people have responded. So if you're feeling anxious, you got some issues, you want to get some culturally appropriate listeners to hear you out, just hear you out. And if there's a need for a referral, we can do that. It is anonymous. Nobody will know, and it's confidential. You're totally protected, but we want to be able to relieve some of that stress. Domestic violence, child abuse, alcoholism, drug, I mean, all this stuff is like, and just COVID craziness, you know. So give us a call at 877-827-6677. 877-827-6677, and you will get a culturally appropriate listener to hear you out. And we call it Community Cares Listening Line, because we do care, and we are here to listen. When we get to our call-in section, I also want to talk about a big Juneteenth celebration that WBAI will be carrying live on this coming Saturday, June 19th, but we'll talk about that in some detail when we finish our interview with our very special guest who is joining us from Paris, France. She is none other than Julia Wright, and she is the daughter of the iconic Richard Wright, the author of Black Boy and many other significant writings. Julia Wright, welcome to Vantage Point.
Thank you.
It's so great to have.
I'm honored to be on your show.
Right. Well, we're honored to have you on our show, and we want to get right into it. We want to let people know that I actually became connected to you and honored to have done so through some work being done by the Institute of the Black World, or by the National African American Reparations Commission and the Fund for Reparations Now, which is a group of white allies who are fighting for reparations and have connected to the struggle of the Elaine Legacy Center around the massacre that took place, unfortunately, the horrific massacre that took place in 1917. And it's through that that we came to hear about you and to know about you. And so we just wanted to acknowledge that as we proceed with our interview. And to dive right into it, you have become a writer and a human rights advocate in your own right. But I'd like for you to talk to our audience about your father and how your relationship with him influenced your evolution and development.
Well, my father grew up in the South, suffered terrible hunger, biological hunger, but also affective hunger, because his father deserted the family. My father, having written his two iconic books, First Native Son and then Black Boy, decided to leave the United States in an act not of exile, I'd say self-expatriation, because that's more active. There was agency there. He wanted to write, to create freely, without censorship, without having to look over his shoulder. And the other myth about him was that once having left the States, he never wrote a good book again, which is absolutely not true. He wrote beautiful books. He wrote in 1953 a book called Black Power. Before the word was ever became an outcry down south, he was prescient in so many ways. I mean, to me, he was a black canary in the mine shaft of our culture.
Right, right. And so in your own way, as you grew up, I assume but sometimes we cannot assume these things, that he was an inspiration to you in terms of what you've become as a human rights advocate and a writer yourself and an accomplished writer.
Well, you know, it's so true. Today, only today, I had to finish a piece on my great-uncle, Silas Hoskins, who was lynched in 1916 in Arkansas, in Elaine, Arkansas. And in order to write that piece, very difficult to write a piece on that, but in order to write that piece, I had to go to Chapter 2 of Black Boy, where my father talks about his experience of realizing one day that his favorite uncle was missing. He was 8 years old, and he could hear the adults whispering over his head, and he realized there was terror around him, but he was only 8 years old, and he couldn't understand what was happening. And that chapter two of Black Boy, to me, explains a lot about my father. I think that the experience of the lynching of the uncle who brought food for the first time into the house, who was his favorite uncle, for whom there was no body, no funeral, no flowers, just flight, just fear. That lynching was probably one of the decisive reasons that made my father become a writer. And in that chapter, there are 10 words. My father says to his mother, Ella, "But why didn't we fight? Why didn't we do something about it?"
Wow.
And his mother slaps him into silence. She's so afraid.
Oh, my God.
And those words reverberate. They, to me, they're my legacy. I mean, I'm not going to appropriate them. They're everybody's legacy. But they're my unquiet legacy because today I'm 79. I'm an elder. For the past 50 years, I've been a journalist monitoring human rights in the prisons and the dungeons of our country, and especially on our death rows, because that's where the high-tech lynchings take place. Because of those words.
Right. Now, you anticipated my next question, and we maybe flesh it out a little bit more, because I was going to, my next question was your connection, the connection to Elaine, Arkansas, and you really have talked about that in ways that I think are searing in terms of the trauma and the fear and capturing what it meant. And of course, we're in this period of inflection right now. We've just gone through 100 years of looking at Tulsa, but Elaine, Arkansas was mentioned on more than one occasion. I think that people really are not aware as much as they should be about what happened in Elaine, Arkansas. So I don't know if you would care to just share a little bit about really Elaine, Arkansas, and the massacre that took place, and some of those areas of discussion, if you would like.
Well, you know, I'm going to be very humble, and I'm going to admit to what a lot of us are guilty of today, and that is how much in darkness we have been. And this darkness has two causes, I think. It's the darkness that's been imposed upon us by design. We're made not to remember. It's in a certain number of higher ups' interest for us not to be to remember, to engineer our amnesia, like the anti-1619 project, etc.
Right.
But there's also another darkness, and that's our unwillingness to remember.
Wow.
Our own unwillingness. I'll always remember an interview that Toni Morrison gave when she was researching Beloved, for Beloved, to write Beloved, and she went down south and visited families, black families, and asked them if they had mementos from slavery. And people, black folk, wouldn't admit to having those mementos because they were ashamed. We're ashamed. I mean, my own great aunt Maggie, the wife of my great uncle Silas, who was lynched, did not want to be mentioned as a woman, as the wife, as the widow of somebody who had been lynched. Mm. So we're the own, how can I say, we're the own accomplices, in a sense, of this amnesia, if we don't deconstruct the lies. And this year, I mean, I think this is an amazing year, because so much is coming to the surface about so many lies that are being that have been told, and I'm learning. I'll just give you one example. It won't be about Elaine, but it'll be about something I found out just today. I was researching to write about my great uncle who was lynched. And so I was researching some dates. And I realized that my great great grandfather, the grandfather of Richard Wright, whose name was Richard Wilson, who was a militant runaway slave who ran from his master to go and join the Union Army, a wonderful character, died in 1921. And it's the 100th year of his death.
Oh, my goodness.
And I would have gone through this year without knowing about it.
Right. Truly amazing.
We don't know. We're so ignorant about so many things about ourselves.
Right. Well, as we, I want to get more in depth into your current human rights work. You've already alluded to it. I want to get into more detail. And there's a major, major event coming up on this coming Thursday. But before we do that, would you be so kind as to read one of your poems for our audience?
Oh, I'd love to. It's a poem I wrote on the anniversary day of George Floyd's lynching. And I addressed it to my great uncle and to George Floyd. On the first anniversary of the day when so very slowly, so very pleasurably, so cruelly yet ropelessly, George Floyd was lynched, I greet you, native daughters and sons of Arkansas, where my great uncle Silas Hoskins was so very invisibly, so very silently, so cruelly yet filmlessly lynched. From one century to the next, we still hammer at the rock of white silence. We still pour water on the drunkenness of sick pleasure. We still offer the libation of our spared breath to say their names. We do not have a body for disappeared silence, so we will write on paper and hopefully in stone, May 25th, a death date for all our unburied soldiers.
Oh, wow. How powerful. How powerful. It's interesting. We're doing some work. By we, I mean the Fund for Reparations Now and the National African American Reparations Commission in Atlanta around the Chattahoochee Brick Company, which Douglas Blackman describes as a death camp using forced labor, also known as convict lease labor. And many of the people were just literally died on the premises of those grounds and never received a proper burial. And some of the names are known, others are not. And it's one of our commissioners, Dr. Joyce King, came up with this idea of, on that ground, placing a memorial to the unknown forced laborers, forced enslaved African ancestors. So it just, when you said that, it just brought that to mind. Thank you so much.
I would love to get information on that, because that reminds me of the Move Bones tragedy that came to light recently, of the unspeakable ordeal that so many black mothers, not only Move, but, I mean, this is timeless. The torture of having to relive mourning. I mean, the right to rest in peace that is not respected. It's unspeakable. It's a crime against humanity.
It really is. And both in Elaine, Arkansas, there are indication of mass graves. Certainly in Tulsa, you know, people were unceremoniously just dumped in what they think are mass graves. There is now an excavation project going on there. But you mentioned something. This is a moment of inflection, a moment where truth crushed the earth is rising. And in rising, it is, you know, we're very much involved in the quest for reparations, reparatory justice. And so it's also a moment for rising and repairing and healing, which we must undergo as a people, and indeed all people who are in some ways victimized by what the whole question of amnesia that you talked about earlier. Well, let's now get into your work. You've already alluded to it in terms of the death penalty, and there may be more to it, but it may be self-evident to most people, but at least it would be good to have you express it. You are very much dedicated to ending capital punishment, so talk to us about why ending capital punishment, and just talk to us about, you've already begun to talk about a little bit, the work that you're doing to end capital punishment.
You know, under COVID, and even before COVID, my mind started to expand that definition of capital punishment, and to realize that the death sentence, the life sentences in our country are so long that even life sentences without parole are slow death. So there is death row, and there's slow death row. Right. And under COVID, they're getting to be more and more alike, unfortunately. I mean, I heard you on the news speaking about the Delta variant. And all weekend, I've been doing research on the Delta variant statistics as they would apply to prison guards who are not undergoing mandatory testing, but, however, who bring the virus into our prisons. Mm. And the statistics are that prison guards, for some reason that has yet to be defined, are not vaccinated. The very small percentage of them are vaccinated, and they do not have to be to go and work in our prisons. Therefore, exposing our prisoners who are disproportionately black and brown and Indian and Asian to the virus. So under COVID and the use of solitary confinement as a mitigation measure, which is torture, actually, there are actually two death rows that are getting more and more alike. And from the point of view of human rights violation, it's scary.
Right.
So all weekend I've been researching what would happen if because of this non-mandatory testing for the guards, what would happen to our prisoners who are railroaded into prison for reasons that we know, what would happen to them? They wouldn't even have time to prove their innocence. It wouldn't be a question of trials or going to court or being paroled or being able to prove that they're wrongfully convicted. It would just be a COVID sentence.
A COVID death sentence.
So there are many questions to be asked, but I just wanted to add a footnote to the reparations now, it's such an enormous issue, and I'm such a small person, so you're going to forgive me if I maybe sound naive. But here's a thought. I was one of the many thousands of people who helped get Mumia Abu-Jamal off death row. One of the reasons why he was put on death row in the first place was his whistleblowing journalism on the Black Panthers, but also on MOVE. Because of the way they were targeted by the police. Mumia won awards by reporting on this police brutality. He was a fine journalist. He still is. He writes. He comments behind bars. But my point being that MOVE, now that the Bones tragedy has come to light, and the city of Philadelphia wants to apologize, wants to make big dollars reparations. The move, family says, no. We will take your dollars later. You can't give us our dead children back.
That's
you
right.
can't bring them back.
That's correct.
But you can free Mumia. We want life. And I don't know, when they said that at that press conference, and they've kept saying it since, it did something psychologically to me. And I'm going to try to describe what it did to me. It made me feel redeemed. Is it something of the auction slave in me? Way back then, something that I was monetized for, the feeling that I've been paid for, that disappeared when they said that.
Wow. Yes.
And, you know, in all humility, I thank them for that.
Yes. Yes.
They've helped me.
Right.
Because we're walking in a lot of darkness. And, you know, it reminds me of my father's hero in the book that just came out, The Man Who Lived Underground. He's in the sewer. Fred Daniels is in the sewer. And he finds a way into an office where he steals the dollars out of the safe, and he takes the dollars down in the sewer, but the dollars have no worth down underground in a sewer. What is he going to do with them? So he finds a pot of glue, and he uses the dollars as wallpaper. And he laughs. Yes. He laughs. It's a wonderful part of the book.
Right, right, right.
And I love that part of the book because I have the feeling my father is saying, you know, there's something more than dollars to our worth.
Of course. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, before we run out of time, let me just go to another part of what you're doing. An incredible event coming up on this coming Thursday. It's called the Richard Wright Summit, the Father-Daughter Legacy. Talk to us about it. Share what's going to happen on this Thursday, June 17th. Talk to us about it.
Yeah, I'm very honored to be hosted by the Elaine Legacy Center. And the moderator will be none other than Reverend Judge Wendell Griffith. I'm very impressed. And we're going to speak to the necessity of unsealing the secrets. Because you can't take action, or you can't even decide to take action, if you don't unseal the secrets. That's the first step. And there's so many lies to deconstruct all around us, the myths. And I would like to speak to a few of those lies or myths that have darkened our Black history. I'll begin with the lie that Carolyn Bryant told about Emmett Till.
Mm.
Deconstruct that, because there's more to that lie than meets the eye. And I would like to speak to that. That is a very interesting lie when you look at the chronology of it. How to realize to what extent there is a need for these lies to do what they do. I was researching, I think it was Rosewood, how I think three different lies were constructed for Rosewood. I mean, you know, one was not enough. You needed three to justify, you know. I think we should be very, very careful, especially since Trump and QAnon, about the role that lies play in our social media society and how we can detoxify from them.
Right. Well, it sounds like it's going to be an incredible event again, a call to action dialogue moderated by Reverend Judge Wendell Griffin. Also, Attorney Feronda Brasfield will share her advocacy experience as well. It is a Richard Wright Summit, the Father-Daughter Legacy. I'm looking at this flyer. It's a beautiful flyer with you and being cuddled by your father, and it's going to be a great experience. Now, how do people connect? Is there a website that people can go to register for this?
I think is there not a line where people can click and register?
There is, but I'll have to follow up on this, because I have a registration form, but I don't have, in order to share with our audience how they can. What I think they should do, they can just go to the website of the Elaine Legacy Center. That's the way to do it.
Absolutely.
So if our audience goes to the Elaine Legacy Center, I'm sure this event is advertised and they'll know how to register for it. It is going to be absolutely credible. We've run out of time. All the way from Paris, France, it has been a remarkable, incredible, enriching, stimulating,
healing
experience to be able to talk to you.
Thank you very much. Yes.
It's been so wonderful.
And greetings to your team.
All right. Thank you so much. And we hope to do it again. And good luck. It's not even good luck. We know that it's going to be an incredible unpacking these lies. You've talked about them and piercing the darkness and shining light. Seems to be something that you're very committed to, obviously, and it's going to be liberating, and we know that this forum is going to be an incredible success. So thank you so much again for joining us here on Vantage Point on WBAI 99.5 FM on the Pacifica Network. All right, that was Dr. Julia. And I've given her a doctorate. Maybe she is a doctor. But anyway, that's Julia Wright, the daughter of Richard Wright. We actually extended the interview because you couldn't cut that off. I mean, that was just too rich to cut off. But we just have a few more minutes now to go to our listening audience. If you just want to comment or add your thoughts to what you've heard here on WBAI, a very special interview with a very special guest. We really worked hard to get this done. Really a appreciation to our team, our studio producer, Reggie, for helping to make this happen. We were a little nervous and anxious about it, but we made it happen, and I am so happy. It's one of the proudest moments in terms of having a Vantage Point. So those of you who'd like to call in and offer your opinions or reflections on what Julia Wright had to say, or even on the issues that she talked about, 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. And while you're doing that, let me just also let you be aware because that's what WBAI does, that on this coming Saturday, June 19th, which is Juneteenth, you'll be able to tune in live on WBAI for a Juneteenth celebration. It's called American Freedom Day. Only together are we free. A day by healing, by the Healing of Nations Foundation in association with Carnegie Hall. Our beloved Reverend Dr. James Ford, the senior pastor emeritus at Riverside Church, is going to be the host. Martin Luther King III will be speaking. Dr. Iva Carruthers, Brian Stevenson, who many people know for his incredible, powerful lynching museum in Montgomery, Alabama, and Sheila Jackson Lee, Congressman Sheila Jackson Lee, who is leading the charge for H.R. 40, and we're very close to getting there. We'll be among the honorees, and of course, there will be many, many great performances, performers, not the least of which will be the Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater. So you'll be tuning in on this coming Saturday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, for this incredible, amazing, spectacular Juneteenth program aired live here on WBAI. So let's continue to plug the number here. Phones are wide open. We got time for maybe four or five callers if you call right now. 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. Those of you who listened, you may want to reflect. You may want to add your comments on what was discussed in terms of the death penalty, the whole issue of payments, that we cannot be paid enough for what has occurred, the Holocaust of enslavement, the whole issue of the of what happened to MOVE. They're saying the payments letter later. Let's free Mumia. That, they're saying, would be part of the repair. And she said that that really kind of uplifted and released the whole notion of the commodification, the auction block notion, that you can pay for what happened, and her reflections. And then, you know, talking about her uncle, Silas Haskins, who was lynched in Elaine, Arkansas, the favorite uncle of Richard Wright, her father, that inspired him to write. And you could hear from the poem that she read commemorating or calling our attention to the public lynching of George Floyd. And then she talked about the 100th anniversary of someone who went off into the Union Army. I forget, it was one of her great grandfathers on the other side. A remarkable, remarkable interview. 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877 will give you an opportunity to get a couple of calls in to listen to the interview, hopefully, and we'll have share your perspectives on it. Reparations are on the way. You know, huge movement building towards not only the passage of H.R. 40 in the House of Representatives, but pushing it on past the obstructionists in the Senate, because in the Senate, it will not see the light of day because there are not enough Democrats and there's no Republicans who are signing on. The Republicats, and I put KKK in that, the white nationalist, white power folk who are really trying to install white majority minority rule seriously in this country through all the gerrymandering, all of the creating of these super red districts. It is a serious, serious moment in the history of this country. So H.R. 40 is moving forward. And again, exciting news because Charles Barron's Queen Mother Moore bill, Queen Mother Moore reparations bill, actually passed out of the Government Operations Committee through the Ways and Means Committee. And this last Tuesday actually passed the New York State Assembly. Now it has to pass the Senate. And we're confident that with your support, it will pass. And it has the precedent of being the only one so far. Well, California has passed one, but this one sets a model because it will have more community representatives. The community will have the majority. There'll be, I think, a total of 11 people on the commission. Three will be appointed by ANCOBRA. Three will be appointed by December 12th Movement. And three by the Institute of the Black World 21st Century. And we're delighted to do so. Again, 212-209-2877. If we have people who are out there who are listening, we have a few more minutes. We can get a couple of callers in. I'd love to hear from our audience in terms of your reflections on the interview with Julia Wright. Hopefully you heard it. And you can call from anywhere in the country, by the way. Anywhere in the country, 212-209-2877. Again, a remarkable interview, especially calling, coming in all the way from Paris, France. 79 years old, but having evolved and having experienced so much in terms of her father. Many of us, you know, in terms of Black literature, Native Son is sort of one of the required books. Black Boy, I mean, just cataloging, again, the experiences of the soul of Black folk, if you will. Certainly Richard Wright, one of the giants in the literary pantheon of Black folk in this country. So again, 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. We're running out of time, but we still can take a couple of callers if we get them in now. And I guess we finally have one of callers. So thank you so much. You're on Vantage Point. You're on the line.
Ms. Wright is on point in unsealing the secrets and the big lies and the lynchings, including the lynching, Ron, that you're connected to that connects to a big lie and plagiarism, intellectual property theft. Cease and desist.
All right. Thank you so much for your call. If there are others who'd like to call, you can call now at 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. I guess it's one of those interviews that you just sit back and reflect on and you listen to and you just take it in. But we do have another caller. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Good afternoon, Dr. Daniels. This is Vincent from Plainfield, New Jersey. And I was calling to say I was in perfect timing to hear the program come on to hear Mrs. Wright speak, and I shared it with my mother. I have spoken on Reverend Sharpton's show a couple of times announcing that Mumia should be freed, and I'm so happy to hear that there's a giant who is also out there fighting on his behalf. And once again, I'm just so thankful that I caught the radio show at the right time.
All right. Well, she mentioned that she was one of the people early on who had been very much committed to the struggle. But she, you know, and talking about reparations, you know, the whole issue that has emerged with the moving of the bones from MOVE, which has raised a whole nother travesty and violation and traumatization of people. And as the MOVE representatives, you know, who are due compensation are saying, the hell with the compensation right now. The most important compensation would be to free Mumia Abu-Jamal. So thanks so much. Appreciate your call.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks so much for your call. I don't know. We may be able to get another caller in. 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. Again, just want to remind people that we have a program coming up on this coming Juneteenth. Let's go to our listening audience one more time. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Good afternoon, Brother Ron. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
Good, good. I just wanted to make a quick comment. It's real therapeutic to hear Richard Wright's daughter on the show. Thank you for having her on. I'd heard her a little while back on Democracy Now, but I just wanted to say in that regard, I've met Maya Angelou, I've met Dr. Frances Kress Welsing, I've been in the presence of Felicia Rashad, and to have a motherly elder who's autistic and brilliant and to be dealing with these issues is just refreshing and therapeutic in and of itself. And lastly, I just went on the Elaine Legacy Center's website. They just list the event for this Thursday. There's no further information. Just wanted to let you know. I sent them an email, you know, pointing that out, but there's no link for Zoom. There's no time. There's no location. So they may want to, you know, correct that, because it would be sad to put on such a fine event and lose audience because of, you know, technicalities.
All right, and I'll try to do likewise. I got the promo and I saw the registration link, but I did not see in it a you know, right. and information that I could share. I thought perhaps, and perhaps it was too much to expect, Julia, you're right, to have that information. But we'll try to get that information and share it with our audience because it is going to be a powerful program. And I agree with you. It's therapeutic. I mean, I had to let the interview go longer because I was just, I mean, she was opening up so many, you know, windows and shedding so much light.
It makes you get teary-eyed. Yeah,
right.
Indeed.
All right. Thank you, my brother. Really, really, really appreciate it.
Indeed.
Okay, I think that's probably going to have to be it because we don't have time, I don't think, for another caller. I don't think so. But really, yeah, to our listening audience, we really, really hope you appreciate what we've been able to do this afternoon. This is WBAI, you know, and there are many, many producers across the spectrum that do their best to offer this kind of programming. And again, if it's the listening line that I talked about, partnership with WBAI, but also, again, this coming Saturday. And we've had that privilege with WBAI to cover, you know, our different forums and the State of the Black World Conference reparations. Well, on this coming Saturday, Juneteenth, you'll be tuned in live here on WBAI to the Carnegie Hall Juneteenth celebration. You'll be hearing more about it in the days ahead, but it will be a spectacular program. So again, this is the Professor Dr. Ron Daniels thanking you so much for listening in to Vantage Point here on 99.5 FM on the Pacifica Network in collaboration with YCRadio.org. We'll see you again here next week.